From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Today, Donald Trump takes to Twitter and threatens GM with a big border tax.
I think it's GM's turn to be in his crosshairs.
Plus, a Muslim's view about why Trump voters put him into the White House.
I can see how easy it is to fall back into a bubble because it is comfortable, it is warm, it is cushy. But I also find that long-term, it is fatal.
Gerrymandering and its impact on Michigan politics.
Gerrymandered districts are, I call them breeding grounds for insane politicians.
And using nature as a model to build machines with artificial intelligence.
I'm not trying to construct something from scratch. I'm trying to evolve these artificial intelligences because evolution is the process that already gave rise to our intelligence.
Those stories and more for you today on Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Armed with Twitter, President-elect Donald Trump went after Ford throughout the campaign for making cars in Mexico. Well, now it's GM's turn to be in his crosshairs. Today on Stateside, we'll talk about Mr. Trump's latest tangle with the auto industry. But first, in March 1812, the Boston Gazette printed a political cartoon that showed the bizarre twisted shape of a newly redrawn election district. The paper was responding to redrawing of the Massachusetts State Senate districts. It was pushed through by Governor Elbridge Gerry. The redistricting certainly benefited the governor's Democratic-Republican Party. The Gazette cartoonist thought one of those redrawn districts resembled a salamander. So he drew the district as a monstrous salamander with horned wings, fangs, and a viper's tongue. And in a hat tip to the governor, he called it Gerrymander. That word is still used today when the majority political party draws the electoral map in its favor. My next guest has been digging into what this is looking like in Michigan these days. Tom Perkins' recent piece for the Metro Times is titled, "Once Again, Michigan Dems Receive More Votes in the State House, But Republicans Hold On to Power." Tom Perkins, welcome.
Thank you.
Michigan's new legislature is being sworn in on January 11th. You've been digging into the raw vote total from the November election that put those folks there. And what do the numbers tell us?
What they tell us is Democratic and Republican candidates for the state house races basically received the same number of votes statewide, about 2.3 million. But Republicans hold on to a 63-47 majority.
And behind that, at the base of that, is something that happened several years ago, isn't it?
Right. And around 2010, Republicans redrew the legislative districts. In Michigan, the party that's in power every 10 years is in charge of drawing the districts. So what they did was draw them in their favor. In Michigan, whoever controls more legislative districts has power, meaning they write and pass the laws. So gerrymandering is the art of drawing legislative districts so that Republican voters are spread among as many districts as possible, while Democrats are packed into as few districts as possible. That creates scenarios like we've seen the last couple election cycles where Democrats may receive more votes, but Republicans hold a majority. So even if voters want Democrats writing the laws, it's Republicans who control the process.
And as you point out in your piece for Metro Times in November, right after the election, here you find an advantage of about 18,000 votes for Democrats, according to the numbers posted right there on the website for the Michigan Secretary of State for House of Representative candidates.
Right. And I should note that it does include totals from a special election. If you don't include the special election, Republicans hold about a 4,000 vote majority, but it still doesn't change that the vote total is not representative of what voters want to see.
And from this packing and stacking that we've seen through the redrawing of districts in 2010, what are we getting in terms of legislation?
Well, basically what happens is Republicans can pass laws that are unpopular, but it's difficult to vote them out of office. You start seeing laws that are maybe more in line with Mississippi than Michigan, but because Republicans are insulated from voter anger, they can push through a deeply conservative agenda that's highly unpopular, but they won't be voted out of office.
For instance, what are some of the actions that you could point to?
Well, the emergency financial manager law was highly unpopular. and yet there was really nothing that voters could do about that.
Meaning that the voters rejected it in November of 2012, and within 2 months we had a brand new one with an appropriation attached, so nobody could, it was referendum proof.
Right, right. And in a normal democracy, the appropriate response would be then to vote the lawmakers who passed that out of office. But the way the districts are drawn, there are so many there's so many districts that hold a huge majority of Republican voters that Democrats, centrists, can't vote the Republicans who pass this law over voter objections out of office.
You also make a point, Tom Perkins, in your piece for Metro Times, about the kind of politicians that this is generating. Want to talk a little more about that?
Right. Yeah. Gerrymandered districts are, I call them, breeding grounds for insane politicians. You get people like Todd Corser or Cindy Gamrat. How long do you think they would have lasted behaving like that had they faced any serious competition from a Democrat? Their base had their back, and they could get away with basically doing whatever they wanted. It took a long time to remove them from office. Had they faced stiff competition, they would have been out a lot sooner. We wouldn't have had that situation. You have guys like Dave Eggema. He was a Tea Party Republican from the Grand Rapids area, who served between 2007 and 2013, who used to quote KKK leaders on his social media accounts. He was an overt racist, but there was nothing that anybody could do to get him out of office.
Well, indeed, he was sent off to the Republican National Committee.
Right, right. So those are the kind of candidates you get. They're extremists, and there's not much that voters can do to remove them from office.
In your piece, you state gerrymandering is, and I'm using your quote, a legal form of election theft.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning?
It tilts things so far. It gives such an advantage to the party in power that it's nearly impossible for minority, in this case Democrats, to win back control of the House or the Senate, even if a majority of voters want to see the minority party, in this case the Democrats, back in power.
So do we have it de facto? Do we have a one-party government?
It's starting to look that way.
And does the general public have a grasp of this? I mean, I'm wondering, what do opinion polls tell us?
I talked to the League of Women Voters. They had 70 meetings across Michigan last year in which they met with voters and talked about redistricting and redistricting issues. And, Sue Smith, the league's vice president for redistricting, said that people really, it's not an issue that they understand. They don't particularly, at least in Michigan anyway, they don't particularly care about it because they don't see the connection between gerrymandering and the laws that are being passed. They don't see how the issue directly impacts their life. And it is a little bit complicated. It's not totally direct. You have to connect A to B to C. But once you do that and once you see how it works, it's pretty obvious that this is a problem.
And indeed, looking outside of Michigan, this type of redistricting is also being challenged elsewhere, particularly in Wisconsin?
Right, right. In Wisconsin and North Carolina, courts have found that gerrymandered districts are illegal. In Arizona, voters established a nonpartisan redistricting commission that Republicans fought tooth and nail, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that it's legal. So they had, in Arizona, you had a situation very similar to what we have in Michigan, and now there's a nonpartisan redistricting commission that draws up the districts, and it's much more balanced.
So would that decision stand if there was a challenge here, or would the fact that President-elect Trump is coming in and getting a chance to shape the Supreme Court, could that affect any future challenges?
Well, I suspect it would stand. But it definitely throws that into doubt.
Now, when are we due for another redrawing of the district boundaries in Michigan?
2020, I believe.
Yes, every 10 years, right?
Right, right. And I don't think the new rules will go into effect until 2022.
So for those who are happy with the GOP approach to Michigan's issues, this is all working fine. But for people who voted for Democratic candidates, so feel they're not getting the state government they voted for. Is there absolutely anything they can do about this?
Well, they can organize, start a petition drive to put a nonpartisan redistricting commission on the ballot. And, you know, it's something that voters would likely approve as long as there's a strong education campaign. And, you know, I talked to a few Democratic leaders, and they say somebody really needs to bankroll the effort, somebody like a Michael Moore, somebody who has a lot of money. And so far, nobody's really stepping forward. So, you know, I think that it's just a matter of organizing, finding somebody to bankroll an effort to get the issue on the ballot, and educating voters on how this all works.
Tom Perkins' piece is, once again, Michigan Dems receive more votes in the State House, but Republicans hold on to power. You'll find it at MetroTimes.com. Tom, thanks so much for being with us.
Great. Thank you, Cindy.